following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland, coming to you from the world headquarters of Pirate Radio Studios in Memphis, Tennessee. We are we're specifically in Studio C. I'm sitting here by my lonesome for the moment, because in a few moments we're going to have a conversation with two fantastic people, one of which you've heard on this program before, Marie Stéphane Bernard, and her director of their new show called Sounds of a Life, Mr. Jerry Dye is going to join us here on the program. We're going to have a pretty good fun conversation talking about opera again and some other fun things too. So don't be the opera thing I get. You know, people are like, calm down. It's becoming a big deal in this country. And there's a lot more to it than if all you think about is opera is the old stuff from Mozart and company, you're off base. We're gonna have some fun having a little chat with them here in just a little bit. Plus, you're gonna hear a tune from that. It's a demo recording. It's not a studio recording by any means. So we're gonna hear that. That'll be big fun. So that's a little bit later on in the broadcast. Before we get into all of that, I do want to hip you to. You know, I was talking a little bit about this last time on the program, this phenomena of, you see it on social media all the time, this whole thing about life hacks. You've been tying your shoes the wrong way. You've been eating a banana the wrong way. You've been opening a can the wrong way. All of this stuff that is out there. Look, you know, we as a civilization have accomplished, I don't know, a million things. We've been to the moon, for God's sake. We work and travel in outer space. Some of us do. Some of the lucky ones that get a chance to get away from everybody else. We've got incredible advances in medicine and anything to deal with our health. We've extended lives out there. We're doing these wonderful things, and yet still, I learn that I've been cleaning my toilet the wrong way. Who knew that you could clean a toilet with Kool-Aid? Seriously, somebody had submitted this video out there, and I was like anything else, you get kind of captivated by it because there's nothing else that you're looking at the moment, and it's just like, you know, here's, I don't know, 14 different things you're doing wrong with your life, and one of those was that it showed somebody dumping they opened up a packet. You know, the sugary, gooey stuff, and they dumped it into their toilet. It, of course, it turned the water in the toilet this weird shade of pink. And they took a toilet brush to it, and they scrubbed it up, and then they flushed it, and away you go. Which brought to mind who was driven to this point where it was like, you know, screw the dollar's worth of Comet. I could buy that'll last me for 6 months. You know, a good scrubbing stuff to stick in my toilet when I could just use some of the kids' Kool-Aid. Which also got me to thinking. I'm thinking that some of this may not be correct, because because Kool-Aid stains everything. Trust me, and I think it would stain your commode if you would go that way. Just get fear of missing out is a thing. And the social media does this to you. It makes you feel as though you are missing out on something because of language like that. You're doing things wrong. Like I said, we've advanced so far as a civilization. I don't think that we need a quote-unquote life hack. What was it, the one that was going around too with the can opener? If you turn it sideways, it opens the can lid differently, and if you've ever operated a can opener, a manual can opener, and you do it that way, you have to hold the thing 90 degrees sideways to work it around the can. I did it on a whim to see what all that was about. And it supposedly allows you to reseal the can if necessary, but it also creates an incredibly sharp edge. So if you're, you know, rooting around in the can, you're going to, you know, lose a finger. and it bleed all over everything. And I don't know about you, but somebody who wants a tuna sandwich is not going to want blood all over their tuna. But you know, but the can opener is not meant for this. It was awkward. It was weird. It was dumb. Stop it with the life hacks. I've been tying shoes now for a while. I've been cleaning toilets a little bit using, you know, proper soap and scrubbing material. Don't need this. the thing with the banana, no joke, they take it and they hold it upside down. And instead of, you know, peeling it from the stem, if you will, what comes off of the tree, they flip it around and they break it off from the bottom and open it up. Nah. I'm set in my old ways, and that's the way it's going to be. Damn it. That's just all there is to it, and such as it is. So there. Right on. Enough of that nonsense. It's time to take a brief little moment here. We'll pause. We'll be back here on the program. Jerry Dye, he is a librettist. He's a playwright. He's an actor. He's a producer. He's a director. He's all of that. He's going to be sitting down with us here in Studio C, as well as the lovely Marie-Stéphane Bernard. She comes to us originally from Paris, France, specifically in a little area near downtown called Montmartre. We've talked about that before. She was on the program. But those two have teamed up together. They got a show together called Sounds of a Life. It is in production now. It's being developed. You're going to hear that whole story of what it's like to work in these types of scenarios. So it's a look at show business from the ground up on a particular production and what all is involved in something with as many moving parts as this program has. So all of that is coming up. Plus, later on in the program, we'll play favorites with these two. And I've got a demo of one of the songs that's in the program, too. So all of that is coming up next. And you're listening to it right here from Radioland.
Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at 3 local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to memphisbrewbus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus. We'll drive you to drink.
All right, kids, as promised, here on this episode from Radioland, it's your second time here. Marie-Stéphane Bernard is here as well, and you brought a friend. Mr. Jerry Dye is here. Thank you, Jerry.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I've learned that you this area is originally your home.
It is. I was born and raised in Northeast Mississippi, but then I made my way to Memphis for college. And Memphis, of course, was the big city, right? This is where you went to get your... I always say Memphis was the place where we went to go get our school clothes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Were you real, like around Corinth area?
No, Amory, born in Amory, and then raised in Tupelo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I lived in Tupelo for a while.
You did?
I was on the NBC affiliate there, WTVA, ago. This was 88, 89.
How great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now he's my king. Here we go.
Yes, your liege.
I used to say I was on the Elvis tour, but I moved to L.A., and then, but I somehow missed Vegas.
Yeah.
I didn't live in Vegas. I've lived just about everywhere else at this point.
Well, now Chicago is your home.
Chicago is my home, yes, for the past 7 years.
How did that happen?
You know, it's funny. I always knew Chicago was like a Zen wave that was bound to break at some point. And yeah, I always loved Chicago. Let's make a shift, a different market. I'm glad I did. I will say I miss Memphis. I'm done awful.
Well, it's not like we're going anywhere.
No, you're not. But, you know, driving back into Memphis is... I got a ticket on the way back into Memphis this trip, but so that was a little bit of, I was like elated and I was like giddy, yeah. And I rolled the windows down and it was spring and I was just so happy and I was like, woo!
Oh God.
But regardless, spring in Memphis is, especially if you're in Chicago, it's a balm.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, we have a lot of musicians and entertainers that move here, you know, from all over the place, mm-hmm. just to be in the middle part of the country for distribution sure. purposes. And I've got a good friend of mine now who is moving here from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and he was asking me about the summer here, and I said, "Oh, that's special. You'll grow gills."
Yeah, it lays you flat on your back, but it's okay, right?
It's okay once you acclimate to it. You're okay.
Yeah. I always say like some of the air conditioning is like, you know, completely irrelevant.
Oh,
like
sure.
A waste of time.
Yeah, you break a sweat in the shower. You know, everything is Bikram here. I have a friend that refers to people who live here as amphibians. I think it's appropriate.
Good.
Well, you know what I like about Chicago too is that it's like a friendlier version of New York.
Oh, totally.
You know, yeah, yeah. It still has that real big city vibe, of course, because it's an enormous city. But everybody seems pretty nice up there.
Yeah. Well, you know, Midwesterners, they're nice and they have zero agenda.
Yeah.
And in the South, and I can say this as a Southerner, we're nice, but we always have an agenda.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
always something underneath. Yeah?
That's so fun. So you go up to Chicago just for, you know, I guess a change of culture and whatnot, but you went up there to work in the business.
I did. So I'm a playwright. I'm an actor as well and a director, but I'm a playwright, and I really went to Chicago to write plays, and I have consequently ended up writing opera. About 7 years ago, I started writing for opera librettos, and now I'm basically a full-time opera librettist. Opera has a way of Maria and I say, yeah, opera has a way of choosing you. You know,
yeah, it suck you into its orbit, if you will. Yeah.
True, and it has been, and I'm happily sucked into that orbit.
It's, of course, it's all show business, of course, but opera is so different from, like, I guess, Broadway productions or plays or film or television in that aspect. Yeah. It was just something you wanted to try, and all of a sudden it was like, hey, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I had an opportunity, you know, and I like all artists, you know, you get an opportunity and you got to get curious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to dig in with the curiosity. And for me, there was lots to be curious about. You know, I found myself in the room with some really amazing singers and amazing artists. And I was, you know, having to play catch up.
Yeah.
And I could not be bored. You know.
So as a librettist, you're in essence, you're sketching out the story.
Yeah.
Are you writing the music as well?
No.
You're just telling the
professionals.
You're just telling the story.
I get to tell a really good story, hopefully, with as much economy as possible.
It's opera. It's 4 hours. We talked about that before.
And yet sometimes not. And sometimes they're 60 and sometimes they're 90. And but new work, you know, that has always been no matter what I was working on, whether it was opera or theater or directing, new work has always been my bread and butter. It's always been the space that I found most interesting, particularly because I love collaboration.
Right.
You know. So, for instance, we've been working on developing this piece for Marie, and what's been so great is this. You know, you just have to come hat in hand and watch it unfold. And new opera, which in the United States, in Europe, new opera is. Yeah, you know, there's enormous culture around it, but in the United States, it's still pretty fresh.
It is.
Yeah.
Is it because American audiences don't have the patience for it, you think?
I think they're figuring it out. And then the opera is understanding that they have to tell stories that are increasingly more relevant to a younger and younger audience, you know? It's exciting. This is the golden age of opera in America right now. There are more operas being made, new opera being made in the United States than ever before in the history.
I see stories written about it all the time.
Yeah, it's exciting.
You know, because now even, you know, radio and entertainment media, they're really picking up on it. They're picking up on talent like Marie here.
Yeah.
And they love talking about it. We love talking. That's why we had you on.
Absolutely. Here we are. Here we are.
So how did you meet this guy?
Here we go. It's quite 10 years ago when he was still in Memphis. And, you know, as artists, we discover each other, we recognize each other, and we are like little butterflies and with all our antennas, and we see, this is a brother. So I went to see him on stage, and he went to see me and to listen to me, and the rest is history. We really understood right away that we were somehow artistically brother and sister. And
like our first meeting, you said,
exactly.
we're gonna make something. Exactly. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to make something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to do something even if it's wrong.
And the rest is history for real.
Mm-hmm.
So we always have a special a link together, even if we are in long distance stories, even in friendship, it happens. It's
sure,
what's happening with us, because he's living in Chicago, I am here or somewhere else, and but we never separate. We never had any gap in our relationship. And when Opera Memphis Ned Kanti asked me to think about something special with me, quite 2 years ago, I answer right away, I have the show for you. And it is something that I will build with Jerry Dye.
Yeah.
And Ned jumped on it. Of course, he knew Jerry because he had already a collaboration with him. And we began to brainstorming, to think about it. But I had the idea of the show since years. It's not that it's something.
Oh, it's been
really
cooking for a while now. Yeah.
But it was, and it was, and it is in my mind, you know. And slowly but surely, with this wonderful relationship and collaboration, artistic collaboration with Jerry, and also musically speaking with Karim Majeber in Paris, this dream come true. You know,
right,
it's it's all a process. It is a process, the process of the creation. And as an opera artist, is absolutely unique, because I serve usually the opera of somebody who wrote it.
Right.
So I go into the character of somebody thought about it, and I put myself in the clothes of another character. This time is exactly the opposite. It's so exciting and so unique, and I feel so blessed and so honored to have Jerry with me.
Because you're the character, though.
Yes.
This is a one-woman show about you.
Yeah, exactly. But even more than this, what I'm trying to explain, it's really the process of the creativity. And this is unique. And I am so excited, and I am so thrilled to be part of the process. And this is the first time for me as an artist, and as a woman, you know, to be part of this this long journey, who is called a creation, artistic creation, and
sure,
this is fantastic, and I cannot be more blessed to have a friend and an artist like Jerry on my side, really, and Karim, musically speaking.
Yeah, it takes a village, as they say. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts.
It's huge. Like it's a huge process,
sure,
but very exciting.
Jerry, let me ask you, how do you go about approaching a job like this? How does one take her story, for example, and lay this out in a way that is compelling and entertaining?
Yeah, time, you know, first, taking the carving out the time to do it. But, you know, we met and we did some workshopping together, and just to try to figure out what the story is. Now, the lady sitting to my left has not a boring life.
No.
And that is, you know, that material alone. That's you know where you're going to start from. But finding out an arc, a narrative arc, something to follow. And we also have the benefit of using finding the context and then using music to kind of tease out that moment and build out that moment.
It becomes a vehicle in the story.
Yeah, and so we have to find the architecture first, right? Find the tent poles. They're the things that are going to hold the piece up.
You say she's interesting, which she is. She's fascinating. As though you're not
indeed
in the room.
I'm not listening.
Not listening. But
please continue.
There's bound to be some things that you have learned about her that went, oh, this is just too unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. Lots of things.
This is going to be perfect.
And so many things we didn't even
You didn't
put
even
in
include.
It.
Yeah.
No.
No, you couldn't. No.
And that's something interesting about the process, too. You have to, like, essentially we have to tell we tell all the stories, right?
Right.
We put all the stories on the table and kind of like go, this one. But what's interesting, because you've done the work of telling the stories and writing the stories down and mulling them over, what happens is what you leave out is still in the piece, right? These things find real estate in the feeling and the meaning, especially when you're dealing with music like this.
Yeah.
So you can kind of imbue the songs. The song itself ends up kind of not just being a transition piece or a bridge. It becomes like kind of the meat of the story itself.
Is it a series of stories that's been collaborated?
A series
here?
Of stories connecting songs
to a bigger
that
picture.
That were significant throughout Marie's life, but also
through the music. We find, you know, like a bridge through the story and the music, and it's all about that. And to find the continuity and also the fluidity and the narrative had to really serve the purpose to bring this. Songs, for example, and then up, jump in, and we continue the narrative and going in another world because we are traveling in this show.
You were talking about the people be, or the way opera chooses us, mm-hmm. you know, or any art form, right?
Yeah.
You kind of like, kind of, you go, hey, you.
Yeah, there you are.
Here you, come on, hop yeah. on, join the circus.
Exactly.
And, you know, and Maria has like such a great story. Kind of, a, sure. it's kind of. I call it your origin story in a lot of ways.
Nice.
When she was a baby, you know, and some person, an artist, mm-hmm. noticed, recognized something in you that maybe sensed.
Sure.
Was inside
yeah.
of you.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of went, hey, yeah. no, this is your space that you can inhabit.
Yeah. Exactly. When the business chooses you, is that, I'm assuming that's a big focal point of what your story is.
It is. And we all have that, right? I mean, part of building the narrative too is figuring out like someone who what does someone in say Memphis have to do, or why would they care about someone who grew up in Paris, right?
Right.
What is our common humanity? And that's what we're trying to find with the piece as well.
Oh yeah. Well, you know how it is in Memphis. People go, "Oh, she's French. What the hell?" You know. You gotta see this, but, you know.
What's I always say about? Memphis is full of characters.
It
right?
is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's yeah. fascinating to me. And so, you know, we definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We always have this.
Here in this fair city, we have a hell of a character.
Well,
nice.
And we find, too, that at least a lot of people that I have gotten to know here in this city are not from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Memphis does suck in a lot of people.
Memphis by choice.
Yeah.
It happened to me.
You know,
it's such a thing.
Yeah. You know, it just you wind up coming here and it's like, yeah, this is okay, and then it kind of grows on you like a fungus, and mm-hmm. and then you're thrown into the middle of it. But if you look at it artistically, though, you see what types of talent has come here. I mean, for you, mm-hmm. for example,
yeah.
I mean, you
it's came fascinating
a long way,
that
came no, here a long true. Way to be here in Memphis.
Yeah,
you know,
but, it's a great place to create. I mean,
exactly.
Memphis in many ways gave birth for me. Memphis gave birth to my sensibility, my understanding about how to move in the world. Gave me. You know, artists also, I find myself craving, you crave community, right? You
sure.
crave a family. Like, it's hard to be locked in a room and staring at a blank page by yourself. But when you're, you know, surrounded by people who have your back, and Memphis has always been that for me. It's
yeah.
always been a place. Strangely, actually, in a kind of a cosmic way, mm-hmm. Memphis has some interesting mojo, you know?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah,
very true. And the quality of the people and the relationship you can have here, it's kind of unique. You there is a mystery here, but
absolutely.
But there is, and it is true. Everybody can tell you that in one way or another.
Yeah, we talk a lot here about, of course, with Radio Memphis. Of course, is all about Memphis music,
right?
And that Memphis sound. And I've had some of the old guys from Stax in here, and have these wonderful evenings hearing these war stories about what it was like working in, you know, in Stax back in the day. And I always ask them, so what is it about Memphis? What's that sound? Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? Mm-hmm. And invariably the answer is it's the people. It's not their old joke, it's the water, or it's the stew of the culture, if you will, to a certain extent, but everybody brings something to Memphis. And everybody pulls a lot out of that.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about time here, too. Like, I'm mm-hmm. always interested yeah. in how time behaves in Memphis. You seem to be time rich here in a way. And in the South, too, right? I mean, the South has a kind of a, like,
yeah.
we have a tendency to kind of luxuriate in our, mm-hmm. in
we're
our
lazy.
Sense of, we're lazy as hell.
We're lazy.
Or perhaps lay back.
How do I
try to save you
we're
there.
We're procrastinators. I do know that. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
But even in that kind of frequency, Memphis, I think, is unique, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always. When people come to visit, they go, "Hey, what do they know I'm from here?" Right? And they go, "Where should I go? What should I do?" And I always tell them, like, "You've really never been to Memphis unless you've been on someone's porch."
Yeah,
it
yeah.
really is. That is where it
That's
all
right.
kind of goes down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when
That's
we
true.
Bought our home in Cooper Young, that front porch sold me just like that. I'm like, "Yeah, that's where I'm going to spend some time." And I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. There is
it sounds like so much like a Southern cliche.
It does,
but it's. Completely. There's a reason. What a friend of mine says, a cliche in time saves nine.
That's so true. So,
yeah, yeah.
So with you living in Chicago, did you take a lot of the Mid-South attitude with you up there? And
totally. Great love of Southern literature. That was my, you know, I was raised on all that stuff, Faulkner and Welty and all that good
yeah.
business. And,
yeah.
And so, I've done, had premieres in Memphis of absolutely Southern plays,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
has been fun too. Cause people are working with a cast of people who don't speak Southernese.
Right. Yeah.
It's fascinating translating, yes. you know, certain things.
What is it that you're trying to communicate here, Jerry? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good.
Nice.
Yeah. What is the process for you to write? I know, like, songwriters will they may find a turn of phrase and say, okay, I think I've got to work this in, or they may hear a lick or maybe a chord progression. I know it's for music, but as a writer, as a librettist or a playwright, what is it that drives that engine for you?
New ideas happen in the morning.
Really?
So I can't come up with a new idea in the afternoon.
It just happens. Nope. You just wake
new
up.
New ideas with it. Happen in the morning, and I edit in the afternoon. Yeah. So I can kind of kind of carve myself into a corner with editing in the afternoon. But yeah, writing librettos and working with music has been a very different experience. Writing, you can set anything to music, you know.
Well, sure.
A good composer can pretty much set anything you put in front of them. But I also grew up in the church. I grew up in that Pentecostal.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I was around those kinds of musical lyrical rhythms. You know, mm-hmm. people were communicating really big ideas
through music,
and also not even music, but just speech pattern. Right.
Right.
Listening to my, you know, Reverend Billy, you know, that I grew up with, doing the sermon, and you were rapt. And I think even as a young person, I was listening to the speech rhythms. And that, coupled with being from the South, which has some pretty unique speech.
Yes, it does.
You know, language, the rhythms we use and the
There's
colloquial.
A cadence to that
is.
Stuff, yeah.
And I find that all of that has served me as a writer in some significant – writer of librettos specifically.
So when the idea comes to you, you just grab a recorder and speak it in and work that out? Or do you just actually sit there and physically take notes?
All of it. It's funny. I started writing with a computer these days, and I find that it's very difficult to – I can't get incredibly free with typing. I have to use
– I agree.
Right. I have to use – and maybe it's, you know, Miss Carnathan in third grade
with
your learning your penmanship. But, like, my brain turns automatic with a pen, you know?
Really?
Yeah. And I've learned how to adapt a little bit, but like if I'm really find myself stuck, I have to use my hand.
See, I can't type as fast as I think, or no. I can't even handwrite as fast as I think because that stuff comes at you so fast.
It's true.
And you're dying to hang on to every little piece of meat that's on that bone without losing any of this because you know the one thing that you thought of that was kind of cool, I'll get back to that, and you lose it and go, God, I wish I had that.
I do something called knit one, purl two. So I go, I write... I'll write like 3 pages or write 5 pages and go back 2.
Oh, yeah.
And write ahead 5 pages and go back 2 and write ahead. You know what I mean? But I always go back to where I just left off and it deepens the groove. It kind of deepens the groove. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can kind of think, where was I?
It makes more sense than taking 1 step forward, 2 steps back. But in essence, that's kind of what you're doing, but you're creating so much along the way.
Yeah. Whereas some people I know do like... pieces and parts, you know.
Yeah.
They collage things. I don't tend to do that. I have to kind of keep following the line.
Well, and you said you're not a musician. You don't write the music.
Right. I don't.
Just say, hey, this particular thing, I need a song that's going to fit this mode.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, in opera, there are two basic modes, aria and recit. And recit is the kind of like fast-paced, chatty kind of
and
conversation.
Ensemble.
And ensemble. Yeah. And like choral work too. Yeah. So like and so I know that those are the modes, and I
your comfort level is to the point where here's the story, but I want an aria here. I want, you know.
I try to leave that as open as possible. It's the same thing like working with Marie. Like, okay, I know that we want to tell this story, but let's talk about how it dovetails into the next song or the next piece of music.
Yeah, because I would imagine that fleshing something out like this can be the real daunting part. It's one thing to get the story in, you know where you're going, but then as you start to add layer upon layer and what direction
you know where the climax is.
Yeah. You know where the whole arc of the whole thing is, and that's where it all has to happen. Yeah. And at that point, I guess you're pulling in, your musical director, or you're talking to Marie and saying,
absolutely.
How does that work? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our next phase, right, is for all three of us to be together in the room.
Because you're getting close to it.
Getting closer. We're getting closer.
Yeah. You've got some stuff that you're debuting from this, aren't you? Are you sneaking some of this stuff out? You're making appearances, singing different places, and you're doing a tune or two here and there?
Yes, we are doing a presentation. That's mean like little teaser presentation.
A sneak peek?
Sneak peek in order to... first, to spread the word about this project and also to raise money.
Yeah.
Because
production ain't cheap, woman.
Yeah, I know.
That's so true.
We're working on it. Yes,
it's yeah. And she's French, so that we call it their salon.
Yes, you know? We call that the salon. Exactly.
We're having some salon, right?
Some salon.
Like, yeah, I love it, right?
Yeah, that works out beautifully.
Everybody needs a little. Doesn't want to go to a salon.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yes, it's work in progress,
yeah.
But we are on our way, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yes, it's what I love is to see how it's already well received,
right?
Because we just did some together. It's yeah, why I am looking to Jerry now it's really so. An incredible sensation to see that we are just reading the script and me singing a cappella, the song, the music, and going from the beginning to the end. And so it's kind of technical, right? Yeah. It's a reading. And who is there? They are all very, very emotional and very touched. And yeah. This is...
got a little standing ovation. And,
that's okay.
Great.
Yeah, well.
You know, musicians, and you and I talked about this before, about how a song will mature.
Yes.
Over time, and the more, especially the more it's performed and when you get it out there. And I guess part of that process is you're going to take this music and mature it a little bit. Because I would think, do stories do the same thing too? Do they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We did with the script itself, we did a blueprint.
Exactly.
So, and you know, and we know what that blueprint is, but once we get in formal rehearsal period, so we'll have once we get closer to the end, obviously we'll have a good hearty, like 4-week intense every day rehearsal. And those stories just get.
They tweak a little bit.
It gets richer.
And interesting enough, also musically speaking, is the same because with the work with Karim, I spent 1 month with him this winter in Paris, and my intent is to, of course, to modernize the musical approach in all these songs, and obviously to make it mine, but. To have a special aestheticisms in the music, right? Mm-hmm. And it was an incredible work and process for each single songs, French songs, and then the opera to really find our own balance and our own little jewel for each song. And it was really, really exciting.
Yeah.
And it is. And obviously, it's a work I never did before. And I was so well led by him. And it was such a joy because with so much kindness and grace, he stopped me, said, well, let's try that. Let's think about this word and let's stay in this sound and let's go there and let's dig there. And to have the luxury to have the time to do this particular work is unbelievable. It's very rare. Even for Karim, he told me this is incredible to be able to do this and to have the time.
Yeah,
and this
there's a lot of freedom to it. I would think it's
exactly,
very liberating. Yeah.
Exactly. And and it's a lot of joy. A lot of joy, really.
And I should say that, you know, the song selection is really fascinating. So there are, you know, we have opera, we have some Piaf.
Yes.
And we have some Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Barbara, for who knows a little bit the French songs. Charles Trenet. We have so, it's
quite a mix.
Songs that I love. Really, it was all about that. And they, for so many reasons, they were chosen appropriately for this particular moment in the story, in the narrative, and also for all the text and the signification of each songs. Also, and because there will be subtitles.
So is it all in French?
It's not all in French. There are some songs in other languages, you will see.
Right, right. So how was that?
And storytelling in English.
Well, yes.
Yeah, because as a writer, you're having to look at the cultural differences because of language.
And what's so interesting is, so this is kind of, this is one of my favorite parts of the whole piece. So you know, opera has a history of subtitles, right?
Yeah. We
if you go to the opera,
there's closed
are,
captioning. It's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so we're going to kind of play with that idea in a lot of ways.
Oh.
So when you're hearing a French song, you'll see the subtitles in English.
Sure.
But if Marie's speaking in English, you might see the subtitles in French. So we're going to play with the notion of
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And also, I should also point out, often when you think of pieces like this, you think of them as kind of cabaret bits, you know, like a person by a piano standing in a light with a microphone. And what the vision for this is very different. It is really like it is a play, and it will have scale and scenic elements and costume changes, and it's all of those, all the elements
for one person on the stage.
Absolutely,
that which
I'm a sucker for theatricality, and I will go there. So we have
doesn't that put you in a box though with that?
No. So it's
it actually opens up more doors for
tools.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, open the window, right?
Intriguing.
More tools, and we'll use some videography. Projections are going to be employed pretty aggressively. In the
sure,
too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, why not? You know, yeah. It's there. It's cheap. It's, you know, looks good.
Yeah, and when you work with a really amazing videographer, it's gold.
Oh sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh god. Yeah. You got a landing date on all of this yet? Have you gotten that close to it to figure out where I'm going to load this onto a calendar?
Not really for now, yeah. But as soon as possible, let's say like that.
We're kind of hoping-ish for next
ish.
Spring.
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty ambitious, actually. There's a lot to this.
We're ambitious people.
Yeah. That's good.
And the show must go on.
And then while you're going to take it out on the road? You're going to tour it? And
absolutely. We begin here, obviously, with Opera Memphis, and then, we will be ambassador some kind of from Memphis everywhere. Yeah, we will be on the road.
Yeah, there's touring. A draw. This kind of show, there's actually it's filling a bit of a hole, actually.
Sure.
People need kind of these scale-wise shows like this to fill in. So like an opera company, for instance, operas aren't often performed every single night, right? Mm-hmm. They have alternate nights. So you have these dark nights in the theater. You have spaces that are free that an opera company would love to have
something to go in there
for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to try to take advantage of those kinds of opportunities.
That's smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That helps get it out there. And then is there going to be some sort of like a recording of this thing to release to the public?
Of course.
You know?
Recording and one point
maybe a
video.
DVD or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
A little pay-per-view action somewhere up on the cable.
Oh, I like that idea. Do you need? You want to come in as a producer? Is that
bring it on, baby.
Come on. You need all the great minds in the room.
Well, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know about all that. I might come in and completely screw it up for you, but you know, and I'm here to help in every way I could. You know, I'll bring the moral support.
Well, hey, we'll take that too. Moral support is worth a million.
Because when you're getting into something as enormous as this production is turning into, at least in my mind, it seems like it's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a lot of moving parts into this sort of thing. And that there's that sense of daunting. It's that, oh God, did I just bite off more than I can handle here? And then as we've talked before, mm-hmm. once that train leaves the station, it's kind of on its own,
mm-hmm.
and you're just kind of guiding it. Now, once you're done with this, are you directing this?
Yes.
So you're directing the show as well.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be a joy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, a real joy.
Yeah. And watching, and also shows like this have a tendency to, in my experience, once they hit the road, they also grow and change and morph.
Yeah.
Which I'm looking forward to.
One night
well.
It's this way, and another night it's going
to
be this way.
You have to allow. I mean, there's a different audience, different, and also different spaces. So the goal would be, you know, say, 300, 400 seat house up to, you know, and say like a 2,500.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to account for scale when we can for the piece.
Yeah, because you're an actor as well. So you understand what
a wonderful
what it is.
Actor, I may say.
Thank you.
Seems like he's been acting so far pretty
fantastic.
Well in here.
Fantastic.
Putting up with this.
Yeah,
nonsense.
It's natural, you see?
He's very natural.
That's what I mean.
If I had an award, I'd give it to
I don't get a chance to act a whole lot so much lately, which is a shame. However, I get to live vicariously through.
Well, yeah, but you understand what she's facing up there on stage and what it is that she.
Oh,
has
I totally get it.
You know that mindset that she's going to have to put herself in to perform,
and vulnerability, right? I
yes,
mean, the what's at stake here in pieces specifically with a one-person show, you're having to kind of create the space for vulnerability, right?
Yeah,
and for the voice, protecting the integrity of the voice so that the voice can move through that, right? Because you can't, you know, You can't get up there and sob and expect to hit those notes. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, there's. Know? We talked about some of the creature comforts that she would go through on stage. The incident with you falling off the edge of the stage, been intentional, of course. You know, and then
this was the direction.
Yes.
Don't ask me. Yeah,
I love that story. That's a great story.
It's a great because she's in a wedding dress and she's going off the edge of the stage. And they brought a stuntman in for you or something
Of course,
to show
and
you how to
man.
Do it. Yeah,
we love firemen.
He's hosing they down the front row.
And I did the casting, you know.
Love it.
Yeah, I want him. Yeah, it's just, that works out. And the whole thing about you standing in water, it has to be a certain temperature, or it'll.
Yeah,
you know.
This was Ruselka. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a job. It's a job.
You diva.
No,
well,
I'm
no, because we had some fun at that expense because of the world of, and I'm sure your perspective of this ought to be pretty amusing, but the way some people perceive opera performers, you know, it's that for lack of a better term, someone can come across as a big douchebag. You know, they're difficult, but that's not the case.
No, I mean the way the opera has a tendency to place people on pedestals. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the trick is how you inhabit that pedestal. Right?
Exactly.
That's hundreds of years of tradition that's behind that.
Totally.
Yeah. So a certain degree, you have to accept that.
Yeah.
And take it and own it.
Absolutely. Right. Do you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
But of course.
You have to like embody. There's a certain degree of that you embody.
Yeah. You embody. Yeah. You know you embody. You are conscious of that, but it doesn't mean that you play with that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because I asked you about costumes, and you said that you had every 100% decision on those on those costumes, because you're the one wearing it, of course.
Exactly.
But, I think in some people's minds it wouldn't be educated enough or understanding of that. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, what a bitch. She's picking out her clothes like that. She just let the costume designer handle all that. But that's not the case. You're the one that has to wear it and be comfortable in that and be able to get in and out of it and your changes.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
And, you know, also like the notion of diva, you know, this idea, this concept of diva, obviously way back when women were not allowed to own property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only power they had, they would translate the payment that they would receive from performing in these opera houses, and they would translate that into jewels.
Yes.
And then they would wear those jewels or those costumes and those hats and those things with them wherever they went. And so when the diva showed up, she had suitcases and things.
Bigger.
And so this persona was created about, the diva. Yeah. Oh, look at her. Who does she think she is? Yeah. But the truth was, it was just the story of women trying to hold their freaking power.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of...
And independence. Thank you very much.
Right. It's, and it's interesting how that has trickled down into this, like...
Exactly.
A diva is someone who's like a pain in the ass.
But she's not a pain in the ass, as far as I know.
God, no.
I'm not just saying
that because she's...
Because she's sitting
she's
here
there.
Right next to you. You know. That'll be on the commentary part of the DVD later on. You know? You wouldn't believe how difficult this woman was.
Unbelievable.
No. I have so much joy to collaborate and just to make the music and the show.
You enjoy working too much to let all that other nonsense get in the way.
Exactly. This is
not to put words
in
your mouth or anything.
No, you're perfect. Please continue to speak.
You've heard enough. That's all I'm giving this time out.
No, it's exactly that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. We don't have time to waste for that.
Yeah.
Really not.
Yeah,
because really
you know when the audience is, you know when you've made that connection with the audience, and this is something else that we talked about, and it has to happen, I guess, with you as well, when you're watching that audience react to the words that you've written that's being delivered by these actors, that you know that you've made that connection, that has to just flip a switch for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you make a stab, right? You
do your best.
You think that maybe you've carved out that space.
Yeah.
But when it does happen, it's golden. And usually it's so funny. It's always, sometimes it's just really with a word, right? Sometimes it's just one well-placed word.
And what about the silence?
Yeah, and the space.
The negative space. Yeah.
Exactly.
Breath and
so many times it's about the rhythm, right? So it's, if you say the same thing with another rhythm and you let, for example, a special pause, a special silence in a specific moment, you will get the applause.
Oh, sure. Especially if you time it just right where it just stops and you can hear some guy in the fourth row his liver working. You know, you've got that whole room.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I would think more importantly though, as a writer, that amount of power that you would have right there is like, yeah, I've nailed this.
And again, so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow. Like, so much depends on the notion. Opera, particularly opera, is such a profoundly collaborative art. Because if you could write the best libretto in the world, but
if the music is not right,
if the voice, that vocalist that day is not in place, the whole thing collapses in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true with plays, and it's true with a lot of other forms, but it's never as true as it is with opera. It's very funny. It's helium, you know. There's a lot of hope holding the thing up. Everything conspires to ruin it.
Well, yeah, because there's this conspiracy that is there to destroy everything because everything's so fragile.
And when it does, going to a music venue and just hearing this that one night, you know, you remember that one night you heard that one band in that one place.
And somebody wasn't feeling good, and it's like, oh, that band sucks,
you know, or vice versa, right?
Yeah,
we're in that frequency. It's just like, what is happening? How did I get to be here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it really just goes, we refer to that in here when we record bands and you happen to catch something on a whim and it's just delicious, just wonderful. And you sit there and go, we caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And there's a very intense moment that, you know, when that happens. We've had a guy in here not long ago. He was laying down a guitar solo and I was like, where did that come from? And afterward he goes, I don't know. It just happened.
Yeah.
Because you did record that, were you? I sure did.
There's a great. I think it's a Verve recording of Nina Simone singing "We Shall Be Released."
Yeah.
If it's the right recording, you can get the. There's a false start in the music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
And it's so brilliant. And the backup singers come in, the musicians came in, and it just feels right. And she goes, stop, and everything comes to a screeching halt. And she says, don't put nothing in it. It'll go up by itself. Now let's do it again. And you can feel that recording is
sweet. It just gets so large.
Yeah.
You know, it overtakes the room and even overtakes the artists themselves.
Don't
They're just along for the ride.
It, you know, let it be.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Yeah. You come from a family of entertainers, don't you?
I do. I come from a family of entertainers, it is true.
They're entertaining people, right?
There's one member of my family that made a bit of a name for himself. He's no longer with us, I'm sad to say, but
my eldest brother.
He was an actor in a lot of pilots for TV throughout the years. Actually, more pilots than you will ever see.
So he's the pilot guy, huh?
He was. People would get fired from shows.
Sure.
And they would call him because they knew he was a quick study. He could come in and make a splash. And then finally he got a show. He was on a show called Touched by an Angel for about 9 seasons.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, with Della Reese and
Well, I'm sorry you lost him.
I know.
Was there like a sibling rivalry between?
Never. No, he's 8 years older than me. So he was like my father.
Yeah.
We were buddies. We lived together, actually.
Yeah.
In my 20s.
Yeah.
In LA. And yeah, he was the best.
God, LA's a wild town.
It is a wild town. It's.
I couldn't live there, but.
I enjoyed it in my 20s.
Yeah, in your 20s. That's a perfect time to be there.
Good city for that.
Right. By the time you get out of that,
good
you know,
time.
And it's
you can
like,
enjoy
oh,
anything in your 20s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're bulletproof at that point.
It's true.
Of course.
Yeah, and because we joke about LA being a tough town, as is New York or Chicago. Memphis is a tough town. Lord have mercy, have we seen it become tough? You know, because people here are picky.
Yeah. They say New York is the capital of the world. Let me get this right. New York is the capital of the world. Chicago is the most American city. LA is a constellation of plastic. And San Francisco is a lady.
How true.
Nice, right?
It's very true.
I have to figure out who that is. I have to give credit where credit's due. I'll think of who it is. It was a good one, though, right?
Yeah,
was
that's
like a constellation of plastic. Absolutely. It's an interesting concept.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And in that scenario, I would be very interested to see where Memphis is, you know, because Memphis, again.
It's coming up.
It has its own thing, though.
You know, the history here is very dark at times, mostly dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is a special vibe here.
Because of that darkness,
really?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was
also forlorn. Yeah. Is what I call, there's something forlorn. It's like this beautiful forlorn feeling that Memphis has.
It seems like it's constantly heartbroken for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't understand why that is, but you can look back through history and point out specific events.
Sure, absolutely.
But I think any town has that. But when you go through something,
the yellow fever epidemic.
Exactly.
Alone,
I was just thinking about that. Yeah, you know, the city what lost its charter. 2/3 of the population had died.
Yeah.
You know, what was left here, and then somehow it managed to build itself.
The people left were the people that couldn't afford to leave, and the nuns.
Yeah.
And priests.
Yeah,
that's
and
true.
The fantastic story. When you go over to Elmwood and see
that.
Oh, my God.
It's one of my favorite places in Memphis, hands down.
I go there on occasion when I just need to get away from everything else for a minute, go for a walk amongst the tombstones there and read those stories because, you know, you have, 100,000 people that are buried there. And in my mind, there's 100,000 separate stories that are there.
Very touching.
You know, there's some marker underneath one tree there on the as you come in, it's off to the left as you go toward the Civil War monument. But it's the story of this lady who had been she was raped and she wound up killing herself, I think it was, and her mother had turned her back on her. And the guy that raped her got away with it and with this rigged system.
What a tragedy.
Oh, it's awful. This horrifying story. And, you know, it's just, she died alone. Only one person showed up at her funeral. And the headstone was put together by some secretive group of people that knew her and loved her and put this stone there. And it's an awful story, but at the same time, there's a certain sense of beauty to it, you know. Because of the equalization of death being everything, and that's what you really get when you go to a place like Elmwood.
Yeah, of course.
That doesn't matter how big you are, you're all gonna wind up in that same spot. Yeah.
So let's make the best of it here.
Yeah, carpe diem.
Another carpe diem. Yes, nothing better than the
present. One more thing. What is your relationship to Sister Mayotis?
How do you know? I love that you know Sister Mayotis. So Sister Mayotis, a.k.a. Steve Swift, is truly one of my oldest and best friends.
Yeah.
And so I directed and in some cases co-wrote Sister Mayotis. We took it to off-Broadway. And
it's a fantastic character.
Sister Mayotis is I think, is a bit of a Memphis ambassador, frankly.
Oh yeah, you're right.
You know.
Oh yeah.
You know. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to coax Steve to do another full length show.
I think you should.
It's time. He's ready. Yeah.
He's ready to do it. You think?
He is. Yeah. 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 He's definitely ready.
Have you got something written already? And
if you've ever spent 5 seconds with Steve Swift, he's already has something.
He's already got it. So he's ready to go. It's just a matter of booking the room at this point.
The material is one of the most amazing raconteurs I've ever known in my entire life, hands down.
Yeah,
just a great conversationalist and a good man. Yeah, we're in a theater company together. Still here. I still work with Voices of the South.
Oh, Voices of the South.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Steve Swift's a piece of work. So is Sister Mayotis. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd like to sit down with Steve sometime. Maybe next
time
you in town, you and Steve come by here,
we'll talk about it. Totally do it. He would. He would adore that.
That'll be fun.
Give you a little Sister Mayotis love.
Yeah, why not? I know there's a lot of people that listen to this would be like, oh yeah, Sister Mayotis.
Of
why not?
Course.
Yeah.
Of course.
We're gonna pause here. We'll come back. We're gonna play a little game called Playing Favorites. We get accused of playing favorites all the time, so we're actually gonna do that. I'm gonna ask you like 5 questions about your favorite things. There's no wrong answer. You can't lose.
Great. I love a game.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Reverend Oma from the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop. The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical needs, such as candles, gemstones, herbs, gifts, and more. We now also stock CBD oil, vape kits, lotion, and edibles. The Broom Closet is also hosts to monthly workshops, rituals, and drum circles for those interested in conscious living. The Broom Closet is the only place to get your cards read by me, Reverend Oma, or one of our other amazing readers. Discover the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop in historic downtown Memphis or online at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, let us help you light your path.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
I mean, I get it. After all, it's corporations that have a lot of
a lot of meat on their bones that feel that they can throw their weight around to try and get what they want, you know. And with Graceland, I mean, I get it. It's Elvis Presley. But when you got the guy that's running Elvis Presley Enterprises sitting there, you know, threatening, he's unzipped his fly and he's laid his meat down on the table. And he said, look, there's been cities and countries all over the world that would give us enormous amounts of money to move Graceland to their town for the tourism end of it, which is just... It's incredibly asinine to even think this is even a remote possibility. You got a guy who sits there and he's telling you that he could tear that house down brick by brick, board by board, and move it to another city, thinking he's going to do anything to get his way with the city of Memphis, not realizing that by doing that, he would actually kill Elvis Presley a second time.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Well, there you go. You heard what's coming up next time here on the program. We're still sitting here with Jerry Dye, and we've got Marie Stephanie Bernard.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, and if you want to know any more about the... the plans for the upcoming show, people should go to Facebook and they should look up Marie Stephane Bernard fan page.
Yeah, her fan page, yeah.
Yeah, and we can...
We'll... Fans Club.
Because there's all sorts of things as news begins to bubble out of this
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
You know, people
exactly.
want to maybe kind of get involved a little bit and where they can get tickets or where it's going to show up on down the way. And,
exactly. And yeah. we organize also presentation and how to help in any ways. We are more than happy to get all the wonderful energy and good willing to help this project be built as soon as possible.
Well, I know it is a massive undertaking, and
it is,
and I know it's in good, capable hands. This guy over here, I think he's got it pretty good here. I think
absolutely,
yeah.
Huge.
Thank you for your confidence.
We'll see what happens on opening night.
Right? Indeed.
You will be in the front row.
I hope so. I hope
of course
I
you will.
I want to see this thing. I want to see it come to life. And mm-hmm. and I've heard a good bit about it and what's all involved with this show. And I always get kind of a kick out of watching other creatives put their stuff together and put it out there. And it's I know the there's that inherent fear that's kind of laying on top of everything. And it's wonderful to see that just diminish as the show goes on and the confidence that comes out of it. It's
you know, it's so funny. We literally sat in a small room. Two nights ago,
yeah.
in front of a lovely small group of folks, we read the script, and Marie interjected pieces and portions of songs, and just even in that context, I was like, okay,
yeah,
this is going to
be
sweet.
This is going to
yeah,
be good.
I mean,
yeah.
There's something effortless about it, and it's full of life. So,
oh yeah,
yeah, I have total and complete confidence.
You got any other projects you're going to be working on after this or during this?
Yeah, I have right now next weekend I have a closing weekend of an opera that I wrote for Opera Memphis.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Very touching.
Yeah,
Falling and Rising.
Yeah,
is that the name of the show? Falling and
it
Rising.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It's interviews from an opera created from interviews with United States service members. And it's something else.
Yeah, that's a touching story in and of itself.
Yeah,
too.
Oh, totally.
Sure it is.
Absolutely.
This game we play here, this playing favorites, I'm going to ask you like just five questions here, just out of curiosity, and they're all going to be your favorite things.
Okay.
What would be your favorite show?
Show? Like
whether it's on the stage or whether it's...
Show. TV show?
Can be.
Any kind of show?
Yeah.
Show.
A sunset.
Sunset.
There you go. See?
How about on the stage? What would be your
favorite show on the stage?
Yeah. Whether it's a play, whether it's an opera. We're playing footsies under the table over here, Marie. Sorry.
Yeah. That's my favorite show.
Yeah, right there. Footsies under the table.
No, favorite show on the stage. You know, I have to say, you know what? When I need to clear my mind, I will go. I will go see any movie ever. Lowest comp, low high. I will go see a strange, dark Polish foreign film, and I will go see piece of trash that whoever's in. I love it. I call it sitting in the dark. That's my favorite show. I just like to sit in the dark.
Do you become rather critical in your head about it?
Absolutely not. That's what. That's, you're that's
judgmental.
It.
You know, that's, just like let it wash over you. Go.
So take the steam out. You know, you just I unplug it and I just go, look, that thing is happening in front of me. I'm here.
I'm the same way. I'll sit there and go, man, that was a good story right up until the third act when they blew it. You know, that was because it happens all the damn time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. What's your favorite thing about Chicago?
Oh.
You know, since you've moved there from here, I mean, there's got to be something about
this
it.
This is so funny. Yeah. So where we live right adjacent to a graveyard. I live next to Rose Hill Cemetery, which is a beautiful old graveyard.
It's historic.
And it's walled, right, on all sides. And so inside the graveyard, there's this, and it's big. It's several city blocks. And there is an entire ecosystem in there. So we have a herd of deer. We have skunks and raccoons and possums and bunny rabbits. And so I, you know, all times of the year, when it's freezing cold and when it's hot outside.
Go for a walk through there.
I go for a walk. It's like my... It's one of my favorite things.
Just because the cabaret, Chicago.
Yes. Yeah.
Musical.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. It's a culture in and of itself, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, there's a big French connection to that as well, isn't there?
Exactly.
As far as your career, what would you say you would be your favorite, performance or production? Or is it even fair to even ask that question?
No, it's fair. You know, when I first met Marie, I was doing Angels in America here.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't know the show, it's...
huge!
It's 7 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's why, too. So it was like once you get on the train, you don't get off that train.
Mm. Right.
And it is like this marathon emotional roller coaster. And it was a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah.
The stamina and the... Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Just the joy. Just brute force, really, at that point. Yeah.
I already answered about Carmen, but now I will say the next show.
The next show. You hadn't even done it yet, and it's already your favorite.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sounds of a Life.
Yeah. What would be, I know Marie's answer to this, but what's your favorite thing to do on, say, a Saturday night when you're not working? If that even exists,
that's the real question.
That is the real question.
I'm a Netflix guy, you know, or Amazon. Lately, I'm Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So I get on Amazon Prime, and now they bought up huge parcels of weird movies that you forgot that even existed. And so I've been watching pre-code Hollywood.
Oh, that's fascinating stuff. Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah. Like Barbara Stanwyck, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous.
Ass. Yeah. So I've been watching. That's been my Saturday lately.
Yeah. Well, when you look up the pre-code stuff and see what all that was about, you look at the history of it, and then, you know, it's interesting to read about it, but then you go see examples of what that was, and then it all kind of comes together, and it's like, oh, hey.
I watched one the other day called Forbidden. You know, they're all named Forbidden or like Redheaded Devil. Or, you know, they're all these great names.
These were real lurid stories.
Yeah, there were anesthetisms there. There were also magnetisms, I may say, between the character and the beauty of the photography and the beauty of the...
There's a lot of freedom in the expression.
It's unique. Unique. I really love this time of age in this art.
They're very joyful, fabulous. And then they're very dark, kind of in the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, big time. Yeah, because you said that you like to go out and go spend time with people. And
yes, to be with, really, to be...
Sing songs, drink wine, have fun.
To be with friends, to be around a good table, a good meal, good wine, and have fun, absolutely. And feel the friendship, feel the life and the
fresh flowers.
Yes, obviously. Yeah, he knows me.
Yeah. Well, after all this time, it's a good thing he does know you, because he probably knows more about you than you do.
That's what happens when
you hang around a writer. You know, look, for God's sake, he's going to immortalize it for everybody.
I am learning myself through him.
Finally, what would be your favorite meal to have up in Chicago?
In Chicago.
Yeah. Is there a special restaurant that you like that's I mean, I know you know, being from around here, food is a weird deal, but Chicago is filled with wonderful taste.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And then, again, it's like high-low food. There's incredible fine dining.
There's street food. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's just like really good. There's a place actually right down the street from me.
Yeah.
I live in this convergence of all kinds of, it's like a neighborhood where all different cultures kind of butt up against one another.
Perfect.
On the north side. And so I kind of have my pick. But there's this one place. Ugh. They make it's called the Umami Burger.
The Mommy Burger?
It is this hamburger, and I can't. It's it just makes me cry. I'm thinking about it.
It's incredible. It is. I've never known anybody to get emotional over a piece of meat.
And if you had it, you would feel the same way.
I bet so.
Yeah, it's called a place called Boppin' Grill, and they have this. It's this burger, really good, like actual meat, and it's a duck cell of mushroom, truffled mushroom, and smoked Gouda cheese. And caramelized onions and bacon. It's basically a heart attack.
I have to share with the audience. He's quite crying now.
I'm just saying. Gone emotional over a hamburger. Yeah,
it's a beautiful.
What can
thing.
I say?
Well, everybody's got their thing, you know. It's well, comfort food being what it is, it's whatever makes you comfortable.
Yeah, especially in the winter months in Chicago, you're welcoming any comfort you can.
Sure,
grab.
It's a little bleak up there in the winter, doesn't it?
It can get a little harsh, but man, when it opens up and it's when spring gets sprung, it's about the most beautiful place ever.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for
your
time.
Thank you for having us,
really.
Absolutely. Thank anytime. Y'all are welcome back here anytime. If there's anything we can do to help out, you just let me know.
Definitely.
We'll do something, even
if
it's wrong.
We'll hold you to it.
Sure, please do. I'll do what I can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Un beau jour, ou peut-être une nuit, près d'un lac, je m'étais endormi. Quand soudain, semblant crever le ciel, et venant de nulle part, surgit un aigle noir. Lentement, les ailes déployées, lentement, je le vis tournoyer.
semblant crever le ciel et venant de nulle part surgit un aigle noir.
So there it is. That is a demo recording that was, because all of this is still in production. It's all being put together. You're seeing this from an eagle eye view of a production being built from the ground up. And this is one of those songs. It was apparently a very big song in France, Le Glas Noir. I believe it is. And I don't speak French, so my apologies to those of you in France that are listening. You're just like, goofy American over there can't do it right. I'm trying. The song was put together by Barbara, with Marie Stéphane Bernard on piano, Karim Medjabour, I believe is correct. So forgive me, Karim, if I've mispronounced your name as well. But this is a good idea of some of the music that you're going to be hearing in this program called Sounds of a Life. There is more. There's a link in the description of this show that you can click on to learn more about this program. And yes, there's a way for you to get involved. You can kick in a couple of bucks and make it all happen if you'd like, or there may be some other way you can get involved as well, or to keep up with when this show is going to be coming to your home, which it is. They're going to be going on the tour, as you heard. So there you go. My thanks to Jerry Dye for his time, as well as Marie Stéphane Bernard and all of that great stuff. So you heard what's coming up next time. Until then, I gotta go. We'll see you then. In the meantime, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another. And for God's sake, stop shooting each other, okay? I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.